church from Israel, Rabbi Gershkin is affiliated with a program over there. It's called Or Torah Stone and the Strauss Amiel Institute. For those of you guys who remember Rabbi Schilling was a graduate of Rabbi Gershkin's program, and he's been helpful for us in multiple ways over the years. And he was here over Shavuot as, I believe, a scholar in residence up in Carmel Valley. And he graciously agreed to come visit and share some words of Torah with you guys. So please help me.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. A good morning. Rabbi, thank you very much for that introduction, and I'll try not to bore you in the next few minutes. But before I begin to not bore you, I'd like to know how much time do I have?
25 minutes at this point.
25 minutes. Okay, very, very good. Gentlemen, we just went through the holiday of Shavuos, right? What happened on the holiday of Shavuos? Torah was given. Torah was given how? God gave it to us on Mount Sinai and Har Sinai. What was there in the background when God gave the Torah? There was shofar blowing. There was thunder and lightning. Smoke. And in the middle of all that, God decided to give the Torah. Now let me ask you a question. If you were in class and you had thunder, lightning, shofar blowing, and fire, would you be able to listen to anything that the teacher would be saying? So why is it that God decided to give us a Torah amidst all this noise? I mean, it would be so much better that God would come and say, "The Jewish people, please come to Mount Sinai, Har Sinai, have a seat or stand up, and I'll give you the Torah." There was so much noise. Why did God decide to give the Torah with so much noise? Yes, your name.
To see if they really cared.
To see if they really cared. What do you mean?
Because even if there was tons of noise, usually people wouldn't be able to hear. To see if they were really paying attention. And they might have noise in the background.
You're absolutely right that when there's a lot of noise and you pay attention, then obviously it's much better than when there's no noise and you fall asleep. And you're right. But, and I think you're right, that it definitely was a test to the Jewish people to see if they would listen, despite it all, to hear the words of God. And we'll get back to what you said earlier. Your name again?
Nathaniel.
Yes.
Wasn't there silence during the actual reading of the Ten Commandments?
Not that I know of.
During God's reading?
The Torah reading that we read on the first day of Shavuos, on Wednesday morning, basically talked about the fact that there was a lot of noise, and that's how God decided to give the Torah. It doesn't say all of a sudden there was silence. It could have been, but again, it doesn't say that. At least the description we read seems to tell us the Torah had to be given with a lot of noise. Yes. Afterwards, we'll hear you. Yes.
Maybe it wasn't that it was within all the noise that was given the Torah, but there was noise because the Torah was given. So if you were, it's not like you're focusing on the noise, you're focusing on the giving of the Torah, and that was kind of a
It was a background thing. You're absolutely right. But again, if you wanted me to give you a class, so like you're sitting here now, everyone's sitting down, you shut off your cell phones, and we all are listening, and that's the way you teach. But God decided, no, we're going to make a lot of noise, you're going to have an attraction here, an attraction there, and in the middle of it all, God's going to come and give the Torah. And my question is, why did God do that? Why did God decide to give the Torah amongst all this noise? Yes. Say again?
Didn't he, at least at the first time, try telling them, the people, the Jewish people and himself, about the Torah, and then they died, and he brought them back to life?
That's a Medrash, you're right, that's a Medrash. But, having said that, the Medrash doesn't go ahead and talk about this point, that the Torah was given with a lot of noise around it. And I want to know why. Why is it that God gave the Torah in such a way that it's almost impossible to listen to God's voice because there's so much noise around you?
Dramatize,
absolutely. There was a lot of drama.
Could it amplify his voice? Like,
Could very well be. Could again. But again, you can amplify your voice with a microphone. You can do many tricks to be heard over a lot of noise, okay? If a plane goes right now over us, then I'll speak louder. That's fine. I can scream at the top of my lungs too, but why not do it in a different way? After all, God is calling the shots, unlike a plane above us that I have no control over. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have said that I'm giving the Torah, no noise, the drama's over, we did the shofar blowing, the thunder and the lightning, Steven Spielberg wouldn't be able to pull this off, now finished, we're giving the Torah. It seems that the opposite happened. There's so much noise, and through that noise, God gave the Torah. And allow me to buttress what I'm saying. When Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim recounts what happened at Har Sinai, he again says that you heard God's voice, mitoch ha'esh ha'anan v'harafel. You heard God's noise through all this noise. God's voice was through the noise. As a matter of fact, we say it in davening twice a year. Anyone know where? We don't just say God gave us the Torah, we say God gave us the Torah with a lot of noise. Anyone know when we say it? Twice a year. Give you a hint, it's one day after another. Very good. Our chazan from Shachris, your name?
A.Y.
A.Y.? Rosh Hashanah. Which bracha on Rosh Hashanah? In the Musaf. In Shofarot, one of the three brachas that we add to the Amida of Musaf, we say and we quote the psukim that we read on Wednesday morning. And we don't just say God gave us the Torah. We say God gave us the Torah through thunder and lightning and shofar blowing. So from this perspective, not only is it by chance, but obviously it was on purpose. We begin that bracha on Rosh Hashanah with the words, Atani gleita ba'anan kivodecha, you came and you revealed yourself through your cloud of glory. And it says, Bekolot uvakim alehem nikleita. You decided, God, to come and reveal yourself to the Jewish people through, what's kolot uvrakim? Lightning and noise. Uvekol shofar alehem areita. And with the shofar blowing in the background, God starts telling you, be a good Jew, keep the Torah. Why? Through all the noise. I didn't know for many years. And quite frankly, I don't know now. I never spoke to God. God can do what He wants. And quite frankly, I didn't write the Torah. I wasn't on the editorial board of the Torah. So as to why God decided to give the Torah through noise, I have no idea. But I'd like to anyway offer an explanation. You can agree or disagree. And tell me what you think. And I heard this explanation from a TV anchor in Israel by the name of Sivan Rahav Meir, a wonderful TV anchor who actually is a Chozeret B'Tshuva. She became religious later in life, and she gives a beautiful class on Wednesday nights in Yerushalayim that brings 500-600 people together on the Parsha. And she was in Los Angeles. Have you heard of it? That's like a dumb question to ask when you're in San Diego, right? She was in Los Angeles, and her job was to interview Rabbi Marvin Heyer, because Rabbi Marvin Heyer knows part of the family of the President of the United States, and her job was to bring back what usually is brought back from such interviews, and that is the inside story, or to be more precise, a little trash, a little garbage on the family. She spoke to him, and then afterwards, on Motzei Shabbos, someone said it's Bar Torah in his name, and this is what he said. Rabbi Marvin Heyer told a story about another President of the United States. His name was President Reagan. Remember him? I hope you don't remember him. If you're in high school now and you remember him, that means you never graduated. I remember him. I'm sure Rabbi Adam remembers him. President Reagan came to a fundraiser here in Los Angeles for Marvin Heyer, and he got a call telling him what he has to prepare for this particular event. They said, number one, I want you to take everything off the stage. If there's a band, if there's a plaque, whatever it is, stage is clear. Okay. Number two, all the dishes from the meal, it was a meal, off the table. No one's eating when the president speaks. Three, take off all the flowers from the table. And number four, the room is dark and the light is only on the president speaking from the podium. So Rabbi Heyer understood this is not the Secret Service saying what the security arrangements are. This is a little strange. And he asked him, why do you need this? And the answer was beautiful. When the President of the United States speaks, There's nothing else in the room. And there's nothing else in the world. And you have to only concentrate on him and on his words. So no plates, nothing on the table, dark room, one spotlight on the president. Rabbi Heyer goes on and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the opposite. He gave the Torah through noise because in life, it won't be like that dinner. What's going to happen in life? You're going to have an opportunity to learn Torah. But your phone is buzzing with a WhatsApp message, with a Facebook message, with an email message. You have a TV show you'd like to watch. There's an internet site you're looking at the side of your eyes. There's a newspaper on the table, whatever it might be. Life is a story of so much noise that's happening around us. And despite it all, we have a challenge. And what's the challenge? To hear the voice of Hashem and to actually do what we think is important. So a WhatsApp message from a friend needs an answer. And an email needs a response. And maybe the phone is ringing from someone not that important. And it's time to daven. What do you do? It is so simple not to go to davening at that moment because, hey, I have to answer an email. I have to answer the WhatsApp. The whole world's going to fall apart if I don't say and write in the word yes to a question that I got in a text. Therefore, God intentionally gave the Torah through a lot of noise because he knew that in life, there's never going to be a situation where it's going to be so neat and clean. Anytime you want to learn a little Torah, go to davening, do something that is part of the halachic lifestyle, there's going to be noise around you. Not necessarily preventing you from doing it, but definitely perhaps more exciting than what you want, than the actual halacha you want to do. And therefore, that's probably why God gave the Torah through so much noise. He wanted to regulate us to be able to listen to the voice of Hashem, be it the halachos that we fulfill, be it the Torah we learn, despite all the noise. To make it very tangible, to be able to concentrate on davening, even though your phone is buzzing in your pocket. To be able to concentrate on learning, even though it is so much more easier to look at the computer screen, to look at other things at the same time. God wanted to regulate us to concentrate on what's important in a world where there's so many things that's taking us to every direction. And that's why, said Rabbi Marvin Heyer, the Torah was given through so much noise. Because God knew that in life there isn't this neat, squeaky, clean time to learn Torah, and then there's this beautiful, pure time to daven. Anytime one of those two things come up, there's going to be a lot of noise around you. So I know most of you are about to go on vacation. And you're about to go into, I would say, an environment which, quite frankly, you can decide what to do with your time. You have your WhatsApp messages, you have your Facebook, you have the computer, and you also have the obligation to daven and to learn and to be nice and to help out at home. There's always going to be noise around you. Are you going to be able to do the right thing with the noise around you? Or will the noise around you overcome what you should be doing? When the Jewish people stood on the foot in the Har Sinai, there was a lot of noise. A lot of noise. And yet they were able to listen to Hashem's voice. How do I know that? What happened right after they listened to Hashem's voice, after the first two Dibrot? They didn't die, but they said, we can't stand this anymore. Moshe, you go instead of us because we can't stand this anymore. So obviously they listened through the noise. That's our job. Despite all the noise around us, to decide what we want to do. Yes, the WhatsApp message tells you to do one thing, and the email tells you to do another. Are we going to be able to be the controllers over our lives? Or is the computer and the cell phone going to control it for us? That's ultimately, in my humble opinion, why the Torah was given through so much noise. But it doesn't end there. Because you're all looking at me and saying, okay, you may agree, you may disagree. Did it work? No. Why not? They were not distracted, but it didn't work for another reason. Gentlemen, we finished Shavuos, beautiful Har Sinai. We got the message, even with the noise. What happened 2 weeks later? Egel. What's the Egel?
Golden calf.
What prohibition in the Torah is that called? What is it?
Idol worship.
Idol worship. Now, I don't care which school you went to. I don't know if it's a day school, a Hebrew school, a speech. It's impossible to go through Judaism 101 without knowing that idol worship is out. And the Jewish people, 2 weeks! 2 weeks only after Shavuos, after the thunder and the lightning and the shofar blowing, 2-3 weeks later, the sin of the golden calf. So the first tablets, the first luchot, smashed, as you all know, right? What happened the second time? What were the two differences between the first luchot given by Hashem to the Jewish people on Shavuos and the second luchos? There were two differences. Yes. Remind me your name, I'm sorry.
Uriel. One was that Hashem wrote the first one and Moshe wrote the second one.
One is that Hashem wrote the first one, and the second one Hashem says to Moshe to do it. We read it on, anybody remember? Which Parsha? It's Parsha Ki Tisa, but we read it quite frequently throughout the year. Anata'anit, very good. P'sol lecha shnei luchot avanim karishonim. You carve them out this time, not me. What's the second difference? Excellent answer. I just mentioned a lot of noise, right? What happened the second time? There was no noise. Who went up to the mountain? Moshe. Who went with him? No one. We read that also on a fast day. What do we read? Va'alita baboker el Har Sinai. You should come up in the morning to Har Sinai. The ish lo ya'ale imach. Translate. No one should go up with you. Damatzom v'habakar al yiru el mula harahu. Even the cattle shouldn't graze next to the mountain. You go up alone. So the two differences between the first luchot given on Shavuos and the second ones that ultimately were given to Moshe as he came down from the mountain on Yom Kippur was A. He carved them out personally, not Hashem. And two, it was given in private. And I believe that we have to derive a lesson from those two differences. Number one, in order for you to feel that the Jewish lifestyle and the Torah is something for you, you have to be able to contribute your part. If it's all given to you and all you have to say is, yes, yes, important, very nice, it's not going to work. As my Rebbe Rav Amital, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, used to say, if he gave a class and no one argued with him, he would say, that means you don't care what I say. If I give a class in Gemara and no one in the room argues with me, he said, it means you don't care. How can it be that I said something and everyone agrees? We all have different minds. We all think differently. How can it be that I give a class for 40 minutes and not one person would come up and say, hey, you know, I disagree with you. You know, I don't think you're right. You don't have a question on what you have to say. In order for the Torah to endure, in order for you to be part of this Jewish lifestyle, you have to feel that it's talking to you. And that means you ask hard questions on the Torah because certain things you don't understand. I'll tell you one thing I don't understand. I actually saw it this morning. I have a terrible case that I just don't understand. There's a halacha in the Torah that I have to keep because I surrender to the Torah even if I don't understand. But it's a hard one. A beautiful girl, Jewish. Met a wonderful, handsome man. Jewish. They want to get married. And they came to the rabbi. And the rabbi was preparing the wedding. And all of a sudden, he saw a problem. Now, what can be a problem? Jewish man. Jewish woman. Kohen. The man was a Kohen. Very good. And the woman? She is not a divorcee in this case. But close, she is a convert. A giyoret. I don't understand why a Giyorit can't marry a Kohen. Very difficult. Now, if I just say, that's the way it is, I'm not dealing with it. It doesn't become something that bothers me. If I try to break my head and say, I surrender to Hashem, that's the halacha. But I am going nuts and racking my brains, trying to understand it, or at least shed some tears over this terrible tragedy, then all of a sudden, I believe the Torah will have a future. So first and foremost, Moshe carved out the Luchot, not Hashem, because Hashem understood that in order for the Jewish people to have a Torah and a Halacha that means something to them, they have to be part of it. They have to be part of it and part of the conversation. And therefore, if you think about it, what is the Jewish text that everyone says is the highest form of learning Torah? You know, you can learn a Mishnah Brura, Halacha, you can learn Shulchan Aruch, you can learn Tanakh, but what is the highest thing you can learn. Again, all of these are Torah, but within the Jewish people's mindset, what is the highest Jewish text you can learn? Gemara. Why Gemara? Because in the Gemara, you have rabbis arguing with each other, dealing with the halachos that the Gemara brings down. Not just telling you, this is what you do in the morning, and this is what you do at night, and this is the bracha you make before you eat an orange, and this is the bracha you make after you eat a piece of cake. What do the Gemaras do? The Gemara says it's a live debate. It's dynamic. Ravashi says something. Abaye disagrees. Rava comes along. That's the way the Torah will be able to survive in the future, if we all have a part of it. So number one, God understood that in order for the Jewish people to keep the Torah, and there shouldn't be a Chet HaEgel again, they have to be part of the system. It can't just be given to them. They're part of it. The second difference is the privacy. As Rashi says on the Chumash, when it says, Ve'ish lo ya'ale imach, no one should go up with you, Rashi says, En lacha yafe min hatzniyut. There is nothing more beautiful than modesty, than doing things privately. And in my humble opinion, that means that when the second luchot were given, God understood one thing, and that is that we don't only and should not only remember the big events, you know, the big Purim party, the wonderful Yom HaAtzma'ut Chagiga, but rather the small little things that happen every day. For example, you go ahead in the morning and you say good morning to someone, and he smiled back and said good morning. Are you going to post that on Facebook? How many likes do you think you're going to get? First of all, it's boring. Second of all, you'll get no likes. Now, do you know how you lightened up that person's day by saying that? Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was steeped in learning, the Gemara says about him in Masechet Sukkah, that no one was able to say hello to him first, va'afilu nochri shebashuk, even the non-Jew in the marketplace. He would say good morning to everyone. Now, that's not something you can post on Facebook. That's private. But that's what makes people's day. When someone helps you in school, that makes your day. When someone ultimately takes you on a ride from here to there, can you give me a ride? Yes, thank you. Those are the things that make up life. The fact that you get up in the morning and your parents either prepare a lunch for you, or you prepare a lunch for yourself, or they go out and buy the food and there's a refrigerator full. Those are the things that ultimately we usually deal with. We're getting into Shabbos right now. If your mother and father, whoever's the cook in the house, is not preparing food right now, you'll have nothing to eat tomorrow. So we take it for granted. Of course, there'll be a chillin tomorrow, there'll be a kugel tomorrow, it's going to be delicious, it's going to be nutritious. But the bottom line is, those small little things done in private are the ones that ultimately make the relationship between people, between parents and kids, between teachers and students. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood when he gave the second luchot, in order for me to ensure that this Torah will remain alive and well, I need to give it in private so the Jewish people understand those private little acts are the ones that ultimately will endure. And those private little acts will be the ones that people will remember. And hopefully many, many small acts will be done. Be it a smile, be it a hello, be it a goodbye. Those are the acts that make up a Torah lifestyle. So we started out by saying that the Torah was given amongst a lot of noise, so we should regulate ourselves to do what's right, even though there's a lot of noise around us and diversions. But quite frankly, it wasn't enough. In order for the Torah to endure, we have to have two more things. One, we're part of the process. You're part of the process. You're part of the learning. You have to deal with the learning. And number two, the small little acts you can't post on Facebook. Those are the ones that make up the fabric of the Jewish community, the fabric of a Jewish school, and the fabric of life in general. The fact that someone said to you, oh, you're rushing? Please, cut me in line. I'm not rushing. That's what makes, ultimately, a lifestyle that a Jew can go. The small little acts you do every day, from the way you say good morning, to the way you say good night, to the way you act, those are the ones that ultimately is what we do most of the time. Yes, we put on tefillin, that's a big event. Yes, we daven, that's a big event. We're not doing it all day. What are we doing all day? We're walking, we're going from class to class. Do you say hello? Do you ignore? Do you say good morning? Or do you just look at your phone? These are the things that ultimately we're doing all the time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that in order for us to live a Jewish lifestyle, he can't restrict it only to the Beis Medrash or to the shul. It has to be everywhere. And what you do every day, those small little acts, it's ultimately what makes up your halachic Jewish lifestyle. So as we get into Shabbos, allow me to wish you a few things. Number one, you'll be able to hear the beautiful voice of Hashem and be able to learn and to daven, do everything we're supposed to do, despite all the diversions around us and the noise. Number two, you're part of the process. Ask questions. Ask good questions. Be bothered by the halacha and see and challenge your rabbeim and your teachers. And number three, the small acts. Make sure not to forget them, because ultimately people won't forget them when you do those small little tiny acts of chesed. Thank you all very much. Wishing you all a good Shabbos.